Well, we've been spending some time talking about choosing the God that we're going to serve. A lot of people would say, well, I don't need to choose a God. I don't worship a God. And we've made the point as we've gone through this discussion that atheism is not really a choice. God is not in the atheist's thoughts, the psalmist said in Psalms 10. He said in his heart, God has forgotten. He's hidden his face. God will never see what I do. But we're going to be judged. We all have something that we answer to. And it's the thing that we answer to, the idea that we answer to, that becomes our God. It's what evaluates what we do. So today we're going to talk about making the choice that Joshua gave to all the children of Israel. Choose you this day whom you'll serve. Today we're going to talk about the prestige God. Some people evaluate their life based on the idea of prestige. Everything that they do is intended to increase their prestige or to do something that will, in the long run, increase their prestige. There's some things we know about prestige. If you think about it, we all just kind of know these things because we've been dealing with this all of our lives. The first thing that we know, and we don't get it from biblical information, we just get this from experience. Prestige is really deceptive. This God that so many people want to answer to is, well, it's just hard to understand. So I was thinking about this. You know, there are some professions that seem to be prestige laden. They're professions that people respect. And there have been a lot of people that have tried to figure out what exactly those professions are. So I did a little research and I found out that this is something that's been studied, usually studied about once every 5 years. And I found some indication that there are some professions that just are respected. And these are the top professions in terms of the respect that most people say that they feel for these professions. Firefighters, right up there at the top of the list. 93.4% of people said that they respected firefighters. High prestige job. And I should say that none of these that are on this list really surprised me. Nurses had a prestige score of 92.3. Farmers had a prestige score of 89.3. Members of the armed services, Marines, have a respect score of 89.2. Medical doctors, respect score of 88. Pharmacists, respect score of 85. Scientists, teachers, grocery store owners, or grocery store clerks, or engineers. These are the kinds of professions that people express a great deal of respect for. But you know, I was really surprised to learn that there are some people in this world that think that their job is a job that's a high prestige job. And nobody thinks that except them. Let's take a look at that list. Lawyers. They didn't rank very highly. Union leaders, journalists, radio, TV, talk show hosts. They seem to think that they're really important people. You know, most people don't think so. Business executives, professional sports players. They think they're all that and a bag of chips. And that everybody falls down and worships them. And you know what? Most people don't. They didn't score very high. Advertising practitioners, car salespeople. That should be used car salespeople, I think. And this one really surprised me. Elected members of Congress or the Senate. You ever been around a senator or a congressman? They think that they hung the moon. And they are convinced that everybody else thinks so too. And you know what? They were second to bottom. It's not a prestige job. And then this one gets me. This is the Kardashians. The people that own social media or their social influencers, they think they're so important. They think they're so respected, and it's a high prestige job, and you ought to give them free food because they'll give you a free shot on their website. Turns out most people don't think that. This prestige god, he seems to be able to deceive people into thinking the way that he wants them to think. But most people don't think that way. So this prestige god, he's real deceptive. And you know, this prestige god says that there are some things that you cannot do. You remember the story about the woman that washed Jesus' feet with her tears? Dried his feet with her hair. Prestige God would never stand for that. Not only did the prestige God look down on this woman for what she did, remember Simon, his reaction? His reaction to this event was, who is this Jesus that he lets this kind of person touch him? This prestige god just says that there are some things you can't do. You can't walk down the street and bend over and pick up somebody else's trash. That's beneath you. This prestige god says you just can't do some things. And this prestige god that some people evaluate their life by this. This prestige god knows about no mercy. Just one mistaken move and you're out. You don't get to sit at the cool kids table in the cafeteria anymore. Because you went over and sat with that person. And the prestige god says you can't do that. But because you did, you're forever banished. You can't be one of the cool people. Is that true? I see a lot of people shaking their head every time I put one of these up. And people say, yeah, that's pretty much what this prestige God does. Prestige doesn't age well. That's Bill Gates. He famously said one time, be nice to nerds. Those are the people that didn't enjoy a lot of prestige when they were in high school, he says, because chances are you'll end up working for one. The cool kids, man, they don't grow up to be cool people. Prestige God just doesn't age well when you think about it. And this prestige God, something else that we know, it just doesn't teach very well. Wise man once said that the sucking hulk of the Titanic reminds us that success and prestige are lousy teachers. The White Star Line was the place to be. They seduce smart people into thinking they cannot fail. That's what the prestige God offers. And I really don't think any of us, if we reflect on it, are very impressed with the prestige God, because these are things that we just know they're true. So how do you resist? How do you find a way not to buy in to thinking that because you're a senator, you're a really important person and everybody ought to give you all the prestige that is accorded to you? Well, I think the most important thing is what Ted was talking about this morning. It's Jesus and what he did. That's how you resist. Philippians, the second chapter, the apostle talks about how Jesus was in heaven. He was God. And he gave all of that up. The prestige God would never do that. He gave all of that up, and he took upon himself the form of a servant. And being found in likeness as a man, he suffered a death on the cross. You want to know how to resist the temptation to think that the prestige God is what we really ought to answer to? Think about Jesus. Think about what he did. Jesus, the King of the world, the one who ruled over everything. When he celebrated the last Passover with his disciples, he began by washing their feet. Jesus' scepter is a dirty towel. He washed the apostles' feet. You want to know how to resist? Read about Jesus. And you have to declare your allegiance to Jehovah. Think about all of the examples of people that resisted the prestige God and did it successfully. You know, last Wednesday, Lenny was talking about Mordecai and Haman and Esther and King Ahasuerus. And all of that seems kind of distant to us. But in reality, it's still people resisting the prestige God. Haman thought he was everything that there was. And because Mordecai wouldn't bow down and worship him, Haman became incensed. Mordecai didn't bend. Mordecai didn't worship him. And you know what Haman did? He acted on this long-standing grudge that the Amalekites have had for Israel. Haman was one of those Amalekites that Saul didn't put to death when he was supposed to kill all of the Amalekites. Haman is a descendant of those Amalekites, and Haman hatched a plot to kill not just Mordecai, because Mordecai has not given him the prestige that he thinks he deserves. He's going to kill all of the Jews. And Mordecai still doesn't budge. In fact, Mordecai goes to Esther. He says, Esther, you need to go talk to the king. Tell him about this. Now, remember, Ahasuerus doesn't even know that Esther is a Jew. He had a beauty contest and picked, and he got Esther to be his queen after he deposed Vashti. Esther sent word back to Mordecai, and she said, Mordecai, that's not the way it works around here. I don't just go talk to the king. I wait till the king sends for me, and then I talk to the king. I just don't do this. And besides that, if I go talk to the king and he doesn't like what I say, he'll drop his scepter and I'm a dead man. Mordecai still isn't impressed by the prestige god. Turns out, neither was Esther. Esther did go talk to the king. Mordecai said, maybe God put you in the kingdom for just this time. Sometimes we find ourselves in positions of prestige. And the way to understand that is, maybe God put me here because he wanted me to have an influence on people. And so Mordecai said to Esther, don't think that you'll escape. I mean, Ahasuerus doesn't realize you're a Jew, but believe me, Haman knows. And you're going to get killed just like every other Jew. Oh, and by the way, if Ahasuerus has your head cut off, God will still find a way to rescue his people. Now, it all turns out well in the end. Haman, the guy who eventually plotted, he went so far as to build a gallows where he could hang Mordecai. Turned out that Haman was hung on his own gallows. He'd hatched a plot against the king. Mordecai found out about it. The king said, off with your head, Haman. And the Jews were returned to their land. What about Daniel? Here's Daniel. Young man, he's only probably something like 12 or 13 when he is deported to Babylon. He's one of the best of the Jews. Okay, he is a prince of the Jews. I don't know exactly what his position was, but remember when Nebuchadnezzar took the first 10,000 Jews to Babylon, he took the best of the best. So this is probably who Daniel was. He goes from being the best of the best to being a captive, not a slave who labored in the fields, but he's still a captive. The king says everybody has to bow down and worship this god that I've set up, this idol that I've set up. Daniel says, I can't do that. Can't do that. I'm going to reject the prestige god. I'm going to still pray to God 3 times a day the way I always have, but I'm not going to worship your idol. Remember what happened to Daniel? He goes into the lion's den. Now, God protected him, but Daniel didn't give in to this prestige god. Peter and James, they're arrested in Jerusalem. They're among the Lord's apostles, and they're going about doing miracles. They're preaching about Jesus. And the Sanhedrin, this would have been the Jewish Supreme Court. The Sanhedrin has them arrested. They have to appear before the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin says, do not preach anymore in this man's name. We are, after all, very important people. and you have to listen to us. What Peter's response was? Not going to do that. There's no other name given among heaven whereby men must be saved. You answer that question for yourselves. You decide who you're going to listen to. We're going to listen to God. It's possible to resist. Acts, the fourth chapter, is a marvelous passage that shows people willing to resist this prestige God. Who do you think you are? You're just a fisherman. I'm one of the leading rabbis. Everybody thinks I'm important. You have to do things the way I want you to do them. And that poor fisherman, uneducated though he was, said, I'm not going to do that. He resisted. What's it look like in a practical sense, resisting this prestige God? It means when you go to a feast, you take the worst seat. If you've been to my house and you've sat around the fire pit with us in the evening, you know that there's a rule at my house, and my grandkids and John's kids could raise their hand and say, I know the rule. Who gets the comfy chairs? The girls and the guests. Where do I sit? On the bench. Take the lowest seat. When you go to somebody's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and they're seating 16 people around a table that's supposed to seat 10, where are you going to sit? That broken folding chair that's on the corner? That's where I'm going to sit. That's how you resist the prestige God. Don't look for the best chair. Take the lowest. James says it this way. He said, just imagine you're in your assembly and there comes in a man and he's dirty and he's unkempt. He's obviously a man who does not command a lot of prestige. And you say to him, come sit here by my feet. And then somebody comes in and he looks like he's a man of influence. He's well dressed. He's obviously a man who has means. And you say to him, come take the best seat. He says, James says it just bluntly. You cannot have respect of persons like that. That's the prestige God. You cannot have respect of persons with the faith of Jesus Christ. The two things just will not go together. So how do you avoid having respect of persons based on prestige? You adopt the position that comes from faith in Jesus. I remember when we were first meeting in Brookings, we had a converted doctor's office. Just a long story about how we converted that doctor's office. But when the wind would blow, and it almost always blows in Brookings, especially in the wintertime, it was cold in that building. It only had one vent. And it was heated by an old oil stove. And just that one vent, you know where the best seat was? Close to the vent. So what James is saying is when somebody comes in, you let them sit close to the vent. You move to the other end of the aisle. Somebody jokingly said the 10th or the 11th commandment is, thou shalt give up the aisle seat. Maybe that's one way to say it. The point is, choose well. Choose whether you're going to listen to the prestige God or you're going to listen to Jehovah. And we'll close with the same passage that we've been closing with all along. Revelation, the 19th chapter. John, in a vision, is in heaven. And an angel has revealed to him marvelous scenes. And John wants to fall down at the feet of this angel and worship that angel because that angel has prestige. The heavenly messenger simply responded to John, "Worship God. Let him evaluate you. You won't deal with all of the problems that the prestige God presents. We think, I'm convinced, and I know everybody else here is convinced, that worshiping this prestige God is a bad choice. Make a good one. Align yourself with God. Declare that God is the evaluator of your life. Put Jesus on in baptism. We'll help you do that. And then live your life taking the worst seat. If there's anything we can do to help you, we want you to let us know. Just say something to someone when we're dismissed. Or say it now. Just raise your hand. But let somebody know that we can help you. Escape the clutches of the prestige God and come and serve Jehovah. Let him evaluate your life.